Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our harvest service. Welcome to those listening to us through our recordings page on our website, and welcome to you if you are joining us via our webcam. My name is Gavin Byrne. I am a member of this congregation and also a ministry student with the Unitarian College. Our opening words are from Howard Thurman. Do not ask what the world needs. Ask what makes you come alive and go and do it. Because what the world needs is people who have come alive. Community is not only where we gather, but how we live when we scatter. It is found in the courage to be ourselves and in the grace to honor the difference of others. The world hungers for leaders who listen, for companions who care, for neighbors who build bridges. Go then and be alive, for in all your aliveness, you bring healing, hope, and renewal to the world. We now light our chalice, which is lit everywhere Unitarians gather in prayer, in celebration, and in love. We light our chalice as a symbol of gratitude as we celebrate the abundance of our lives together. In this sanctuary, we harvest bushels of strength for one another and offer our crop with the hands of compassion and generosity. In the authentic and gentle manner of our connections, we cultivate a simple sweetness to brighten our spirits. May we be grateful for the ways we nourish and uplift each other, for it is the sharing of this hallowed time together that sustains us. And today we offer Josh and the Johnston family our love and condolences on the death of their beloved father, Michael. We send our love to Joanna, who is in hospital, and we remember those who have died this week during Yom Kippur in Manchester. So by the light of our chalice, this sacred space is now alive with friendship, with song, with poetry, and the wisdom of many souls. So let us now sing hymn number 68, Come Ye Thankful People. Our first reading this morning will be read by Andy.
This was first read by Maud Robinson at her the service she did last March. So thank you, Maud. I know she's here. This is an alternative version of the Prayer of Jesus by Professor Timothy Sprigg, who was Professor of Logic and Metaphysics at Edinburgh University and was a member of Edinburgh Unitarian Church. O mysterious but glorious universe of matter and of spirit, of which each of us is but a tiny fragment, may the goodness which we trust is somehow at the heart of things increasingly prevail over evil on our little earth. May we learn to organize our life on earth so that the necessities and worthwhile pleasures of human existence are more equally shared, and be ready to make what sacrifices this requires from us. And may we be tolerant of others and love them when we can, as we hope to be tolerated and sometimes loved ourselves. So let us seek our own happiness in ways which help rather than hinder others in seeking theirs, and be the happier ourselves for this. Let us not be discontented at our own inadequacies, but make the best of ourselves as we are, neither envying nor despising others. And let the human species flourish without excessive exploitation of other species, and in a world in which we can still be refreshed by communion with the non-human. And let us not fret too much about time, realizing that everything is eternally there in its own particular place in the eternal consciousness of the universe.
Our story for children and young people and those young at heart is called The Beggar and the King, and it's an old Sufi story. A king was coming out of his palace when he met a beggar. "How can I help you?" said the king. "Do you really think you can give me what I want?" said the beggar. "Of course I can," said the king. "I am the king. I have untold riches and great power. Just tell me what you need and I will give it to you." "All I want is for something to fill my bowl," said the beggar. Now the king, like most wealthy people, didn't carry cash on his person. So he turned to one of his courtiers and said, "Fill this man's bowl with money." The courtier took a handful of coins from his purse and deposited them in the beggar's bowl. Now no sooner had he done this than the money disappeared. He turned to one of his courtiers and said, "Fill it again, fill it again." The king's servants gathered round to look at this strange phenomenon, and each one of them threw coins into the bowl, just to watch them all disappear into thin air. No matter what they placed in the bowl, it always remained empty. "You see," said the beggar to the bemused king, "you can't give me what I want." "We'll see about that," replied the king. "I refuse to be defeated by you. Bring some more valuables, diamonds, rubies, pearls, gold. Surely something can fill this man's bowl." But nothing did fill it. Everything that was put into it seemed to evaporate. "Tell me," said the king, "are you a magician or a wizard? What substance is that bowl made of which enables it to gobble up everything that is put into it?" "I am not a magician," said the beggar. "I am no wizard. This bowl is simply made up of human desire, and human desire is never satisfied. No desire can ever be fulfilled completely. We want something badly, and we make efforts to obtain it. But when we have possessed it for a little while, our desire for it wanes, and we find ourselves wanting more. Even you, Your Majesty, with your untold wealth and great power, still desire more things. You cannot fill my bowl, Your Majesty. What's more, you cannot fill your own." The Beggar and the King. So now let us sing together hymn number 86, "Blessed Spirit of My Life." Thinking about Manchester and a seemingly unending harvest of hatred in the world, my reading is entitled "Hope in the Dark," and it's a summary of a sermon by Reverend Chris Buice. And Chris is a Unitarian Universalist minister from Knoxville, Tennessee, and he facilitates some of the modules at the Unitarian College, and I've had the immense pleasure to have him teach me. Two frogs once jumped into a basket half filled with cream. The sides were too slick to climb, too deep to jump out. One frog wailed, "We're doomed," while the other quietly began to paddle. Round and round he swam, chanting, "Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive." and he urged his companion to join in, and together they churned the cream until, to their astonishment, it thickened into butter. So with solid ground beneath them, they hopped free, still chanting, "Keep hope alive." Friends, don't we sometimes feel like we are in a bucket of cream? News headlines overflow with tragedy, violence, injustice, war, climate crisis, division. Our bucket runneth over, but not with milk or honey. So how dare we speak of hope? Isn't it naive, even reckless, in such dark times? And yet, hope is not optional. Hope is essential. Hope is not something we wait for like a gift delivered from outside. Hope is something we do. It is active, not passive, a verb, not a noun. Hope begins with a clear-eyed view of reality. It asks us to name the bucket we're in. It calls for vision, a direction toward which we want to move. And then, step by step, action by action, hope takes shape. Hope does not guarantee outcomes. The frogs could have just swum themselves to exhaustion with no butter to show for it. But active hope is not about certainty. It is about desire. The will to live, the will to struggle, the will to keep going, even when the ending is unknown. This means hope lives close to grief, to rage, and to despair. As Patrice Cullors of the Black Lives Matter organization puts it, the purpose of the movement is to build collective power, rooted in grief and rage, but pointed toward vision and dreams. Hope and struggle are two sides of the same coin. Without hope, there is no beginning. Without struggle, hope collapses. Writers like Joanna Macy and Rebecca Solnit remind us that authentic hope emerges only when we face reality head on and embrace what she calls the spaciousness of uncertainty. The future is dark, but not doomed. It is unknown. And in that unknown lies possibility. For us as people of faith, hope joins facts to values. It is not blind optimism, but the courage to act. Even small steps matter, whether lowering our carbon footprint, standing with the marginalized, or bending toward justice. And it was our Unitarian ancestor, Theodore Parker, who said, "I do not pretend to understand the moral universe. The arc is a long one. And from what I see, I am sure it bends towards justice." Words that we recognize that were taken by Martin Luther King. So, let us paddle, let us chant, let us act, not because we are assured of success, but because hope itself keeps us alive. Hope is the butter beneath our feet, the ground that allows us to leap free. Keep hope alive. Keep hope alive. So our reflection and silent time today is about finding balance at the autumn equinox. And wherever you are on the planet, at the equinox, there is equal amounts of day and night. And on this date, the sun is directly over the equator. Now, this year's equinox was last week. But let us bring it to mind today. And as you know, the word equinox is derived from the Latin which translates as equal night. So I invite you to relax in your seat, engage your deep breathing. You may like to close your eyes and find your balance. A full equinox meditation. Pause, balanced in the center between the longest and the shortest days. Equinox. The wheel of the year turns and turns again. The air cools, days shorten, the sun seems to weaken, barely clearing the horizon after rising, before beginning its descent. This is our opportunity now to pause. Balanced, breathing in, breathing out, knowing this present moment. This present moment is all we're guaranteed. Like the sun moving toward the shortest day, each moment arises and is gone before we know it. This is the time to pause and consider. And as we enter the season of contemplation, of increasing darkness, of lying fallow, of dormancy, this is the season of letting go, of lightening burdens, and of preparing for a long period of being still, going deep. Pause and consider. Dark and light, hot and cold, chaos and order. Neither extreme is inherently good or bad. It's all a matter of balance, of honoring the spectrum for which binaries mark the end points. So today, in this moment, we mark the midpoint between summer and winter solstice. A time to seek balance, and a time to be free. Now, before I begin, I wanted to say, particularly for those who are visiting or who are new to this church, what we do here in this space is not a sermon and it's not preaching. It is an address, and it is the fruit of my own reflections on a given topic. And you are free to agree or disagree with some or with all I have to say. So with that caveat out of the way, the Jesus, as presented in Luke's Gospel, is a champion for those on the fringes of society. His beatitude simply said, "Blessed are the poor." It was Matthew who added, "Blessed are the poor in spirit." Luke tells the story of the Good Samaritan, the prodigal son, the rich man, and Lazarus. Women were lifted up by Jesus in Luke. And Luke's Jesus enraged his enemies because of it. And he continually drew attention to their hypocrisy and self-righteousness. Luke told the story about a wealthy man who, following a bumper harvest, stored up enough wealth to see him live in abundance for many, many years. And Jesus begins the story with, "Be on your guard against all kinds of greed." And this is the parable. The land of a rich man produced abundantly, and he thought to himself, "What should I do, for I have no place to store all my crops?" Then he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and all of my goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life is being demanded of you. And the things you have prepared, whose will they be?' And so it is with those who store up treasures for themselves, but are not rich towards God." Now, I wonder if Jesus were to tell this parable today, he might have had the rich man not only build bigger barns, but buy up more land so he could produce more riches for himself. He would have him put his money to work. He would be increasing his productivity. And Jesus encourages his listeners to be rich towards God. Now, for me in this context, I understand that, among other things, to mean be generous towards all that is within the sacred thread of life, the divinity that is in all people. A harvest service in a Christian community is a time when we reflect on the harvest of the soul, focus on spiritual wealth rather than the personal accumulation of possessions. But what is this spiritual wealth? Thich Nhat Hanh has a suggestion. He says it is about discovering ways to handle life's difficulties and generate peace, joy, happiness, right where we are on this beautiful planet. And Saville Hicks, minister of this church for a big part of the 20th century, suggests that Unitarianism is a way of thought, a method of approach to the deep problems of religion and life. It is not, he says, a collection of set and final dogmatic conclusions. So is harvest about nourishing both the body and the soul, which also pokes at our conscience? It is achieved through thoughtful and mindful engagement with the world. I want to take my spirituality out from deep inside me and put it to work in the world. I'd like to reflect on the real-time harvest, the vital nourishment we all need to survive. Now, as someone who has lived in this large city all of my life, I do feel somewhat disconnected from the earth, which sustains me. I don't fully appreciate the work that has gone into gathering the crops that makes the food which sustains and nourishes my life. So today I pause and I say thank you for its bounty. And at this time of harvest, as the weather begins to turn, we prepare for the coming winter. Many of us assume that we will have all that we need to sustain us during the cold and dark winter. But this is a time of tremendous anxiety for many in our society who fear that they won't have enough to both feed their children and warm their homes. And the social safety nets that are a crucial part of our society must work for all in need. Now, we all benefit from a successful harvest. The harvest is a collective experience, and a shared blessing. And in the context of a church service, it is indeed, why not, a metaphor for God's boundless goodness. But I find it a difficult metaphor, to be honest. After Jesus told this parable, he said to his listeners, "Do not worry about what you will eat or what you will wear. Do not keep striving for what you are to eat and what you are to drink, and do not keep worrying." The suggestion is that God will feed and clothe you as he feeds and clothes the birds of the air and the flowers in the fields. So why then is there famine? Why did 2.8 billion people experience moderate or severe food insecurity in 2023? Because of conflicts, extreme weather, deepening inequalities, and economic shocks. These, according to the UN Trade and Development Organization, are the key drivers of increased hunger. Perhaps the point is here that there is enough to go around and around and around again. No one need go hungry, yet many do. 64% of Ireland's total land area is used for agriculture to produce food. And if you add forestry, the total land area used for agriculture is 76%. The Republic of Ireland produces enough food for 40 million people. Include Northern Ireland, and this island produces enough food for 50 million people. So, I turn to a poem called Abundant Life by Ruth Duck. She writes, "We cannot own the sunlit sky, the moon, the wildflowers growing, for we are part of all that is within life's river flowing. With open hands receive and share the gifts of God's creation, that all may have abundant life in every earthly nation." It's true, we cannot own the sunlit sky, and we are part of all that is within life's river flowing. The problem is that people and nations can find themselves on a quest for a limited amount of gold in that riverbed of life. And they end up storing up treasure for themselves. "I will pull down my barns and build larger ones, and there I will store all my grain and goods. And I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years.' There is never enough for those who appear to have everything." You might have heard of Parkinson's Law, and it simply states that if you give yourself a week for a task that could be done in a day, the work will tend to stretch out to occupy that full week. It's the root of inefficiencies and procrastination, apparently. And I know this very well because I've an assignment due in December, and I'm going to break Parkinson's Law and finish it this coming week. I'll just be left with two others that will probably take me all the time I am allowed. But you can also apply this Parkinson's Law to wealth. The higher your income, the higher your spend. When you get a pay rise, you find new ways to spend that money, even on things you previously considered unnecessary. Lifestyle inflation, I think it's called. The beggar in our story taught the wealthy king about Parkinson's Law. I don't want to be judging anyone. I'm not here to push socialism or communism or any other ism. But this was certainly true for me in my career and in my life. I must pay attention to all that is in life's river flowing, especially when I have all that I need. In the final verse of Abundant Life, Ruth Duck writes, God calls humanity to join as partners in creating a future free from want or fear, life's goodness celebrating. That new world beckons from afar, invites our shared endeavor, that all may have abundant life and peace endure forever. While this new world beckons from afar, with our shared endeavors, it is indeed possible, hope. And doing this together will also bring peace, a peace that will endure forever. So where do we begin to achieve this abundant life? Is it possible when we nurture a full and healthy spiritual life, a spirituality as suggested by Thich Nhat Hanh or Saville Hicks? I wonder, is it when these values are present in our lives? We are generous with our gifts. We are honest in our friendships and in our loving. We hold out the hand of peace and kinship to those who are not like us. When we harvest well, we have taken steps to make the kin, K-I-N-D-O-M, the kingdom of God, the beloved community, a reality in our lives. When we harvest well, we notice goodness all around us. We recognize our prejudices and how we fail to love. And in the light of the attack this week on a Jewish community in Manchester, I'd like to quote my friend Adam Slate, who is minister-elect at New Unity Unitarians in London. Adam brings his Jewish identity to his Unitarian ministry. He says, "We face the fact that ideologies that don't value a diverse society and that normalize othering and political hatred are on the rise. We are called to commit more fully to a world safe for everyone because our fates are interconnected. Our shared humanity is stronger than the divisions hate seems to create." And I'd like to add my own thoughts and say, I don't believe or accept the voices in our society who seek to divide us, who reject the notion of a shared humanity, who peddle lies in order to strike fear into good people's hearts. You are sowing seeds of hatred and division. What do you hope to harvest? Who are our own? It is the whole human family, for creation is without borders, rich in diversity, which, as my friend Saville Hicks says, is as natural a law as gravity. Like everything spoken from this pulpit, you are free to reject and question anything that insults your soul. In conclusion, the rich man, storing up his wealth, seeking more and more, is an archetype celebrated in many Western cultures. I believe it ensures that societies will continue to institutionalize poverty and hopelessness, war and conflict. God has made good all of creation, and it is my task to make that goodness known and real within life's river flowing. So this harvest festival, let us celebrate all that is good and hopeful in our lives and look with love upon our neighbors. Let us help them to realize their place in the world that is gifted to all of us. Let all have a share of God's abundant life. Let us harvest together, creating, recreating, nourishing, and making real God's abundant life here and now. Amen. Now let us sing together hymn number 207, Earth Was Given as a Garden, and afterwards we will have the collection. Our notices. Pam leads our weekly service of reflection in the church every Wednesday from 1:05 p.m. to 1:35 p.m. And these sessions can also be accessed live on our webcam. Please pick up a copy of the October edition of Usculte on your way out. The book club is reading The Dance Tree by Kieran Millwood Hargrave this month, and they gather on the last Wednesday of the month in the vestry, and please talk to Alison for details. The Seeking Paradise reading group continues this Thursday at the 9th of October at 7 p.m. We will be considering chapter 2, so please do your homework. The Unitarian Walking Group's next ramble is on Saturday the 11th of October, and the walk will take us through St. Anne's Park and the Dollymount Beach Walk. The group will meet at 10:30 a.m. in Olive's Room in St. Anne's Park. And if you like more details, please speak to Marcus or Maeve. I think Maeve is leading at this time. A membership service will be held in November. And anyone who has been attending regularly for about a year, doesn't have to be a total year, but about a year, and you'd like to sign the membership book of the church, please speak to myself or Bridget. This is the application for membership. I think Rory is here to assist with that. So if you wish, this is the application form. If you wish to receive a weekly email with news about what's happening in this community, please give your details to Josh. Also to say that the church has both an Instagram and Facebook account. So please take a look and give us a follow. As I mentioned at the beginning of our service, Josh's beloved dad, Michael, died on the early hours of Saturday morning, surrounded by his loving family. And it was Michael's wish that his body be donated to the RCSI. And we'll let you know the details of his memorial service in due course. And so we offer you, Josh, our deepest sympathies. We bless you, Michael, on your journey. We honor and celebrate the life that has been yours, the lives you've touched, and the legacy you leave. Amen. And now our final hymn is number 20, Be Thou My Vision. What we need is not the will to believe, but the will to wonder. The horizons are wider than we can imagine. And our work is to walk toward them together, to notice the light changing, to listen for voices we have not yet heard, to create a future that includes us all. As we extinguish this light of hope and truth, may our lives be blessed. Let us live as if our presence always matters. Let us go now in peace and in love. Amen.